Okay, as always, the Torah that we say tonight, Shmuel Le'el Nishmas for Gashem Rebar Elein. A big mazel tov to Mr. Adam for your Inukul Chasna this week. And a big honor that you're here. And we'll try not to go too long so you still can get Shabbat Brachas at a reasonable hour.
We'll get there before anyone else.
Yeah, don't worry, you'll still be there on time. The beginning of this week's parasha, well, we know the Torah is not a storybook. And there's many stories about Avraham Avinu, Sarah, Imenu, Lot that are not recorded in the Torah. And it therefore begs to be explained why certain stories are chosen and why they're chosen in that order. Why does one follow from the other? Often Rashi asks why this parasha is next to that parasha. Why is there a smichus? But if we look at the stories that we have over here, we have a hint to the story of Ur Kasdim. We then have Avraham Avinu traveling, and he's traveling and stopping and traveling and stopping. Eventually, then he comes to Eretz Yisrael, and there's a famine. He has to go from that famine, he has to go down to Mitzrayim. From Mitzrayim, back to Eretz Yisrael. Then he sends Lot away. And then you have the story of the four and the five kings, and Avraham's battle with them. And from the Midrashim, it seems to be that there's the Mahalach is more or less like this. There's a few questions you can ask along the way as well, that Avraham Avinu, why did he go to Mitzrayim when he went? There was a Rav. What was the purpose of traveling, Holoch and Asaya, stopping and starting in each place? Why did he do that? Why, when he eventually came to a place and he realized the famine was just there and it was divinely sent, he went on to Mitzrayim? Why did he take on the four and five kings alone? The four kings who had just defeated the five kings. Sakana, there's no way he's going to survive. And he's really putting himself in a predicament which there's no need for. Yehorig Val Yavar is only by the Gimel Averis Chamorus, not by this Aver, not by this this type of mitzvah. And the question you asked is, why is he picking up gifts in Mitzrayim? Sonim Atan is Yichya. And when the Melech of Sodom offers him, he says, in Mechud Val Tzarech Nal, I'm not going to take anything from you. So the Medrash tells us a fascinating story at the end of last week's parasha, the challenge that Nimrod tried to pose to Avraham Avinu, that if he wanted to save his life, then he needed to take on Avodah Zarah together with Avraham Avinu. And Avraham responds by saying, which Avodah Zarah? Nimrod says, this one. Avraham says, nah, not that one, maybe that one. Nimrod says, the Avodah Zarah fire. Avraham Avinu says, well, water puts out fire, so let's have the Avodah Zarah water. So Nimrod says, fine, but then you have to do as well. So he says, well, what makes the water? It's the clouds. Until eventually he brings him back to actually what drives the clouds. It's the wind. Well, who made the wind? I prefer to serve the Bayer Olam. And at that point, Nimrod realizes he's been made a complete fool of, and he throws Avraham Avinu into the Kivshon Aish, and he survives. And Nimrod's been proven to have been the biggest fake around, and many, many of his followers left him. And Nimrod, who had professed to the world that he was a god, and that he was the almighty and all-powerful, ends up being now proven to be a phony. He's trying to save himself. His whole melucha is going. So he has to devise a plan. And he's trying to track Avraham Avinu to get him down, really ideally to try and bump him off or take him captive, because that would suit his purposes perfectly. The Torah tells us that Avraham Avinu went on a journey after the Shvarach Hu sent him to Haran, from Haran to Eretz Yisrael. And in each place, he's telling people about what happened to him, what happened to him with Nimrod. And that's why as he travels through Eretz Yisrael, he's Holoich Benasaya. He spends a bit of time here. Rashi says he's stopping and starting. Why did he go from place to place? Well, he waited around until he'd convinced all the people to be Ma'aminim, spread his story. They all got to know about it. And now it was time to move on. And he went to the next place, and he went to the next place. Meanwhile, word is spreading that there's a person here who's got a following of people who have joined him and have come with him, some of whom were actually present witnesses at the story where he survived the Kivshon Aish that Nimrod, the self-professed god, threw him into. And we have here Avraham Avinu going place to place, and he's accumulating more and more wealth, more and more HaKadosh Baruch Hu is benching him, and he's going with everything that he acquired in Haran that he takes with him, avodim, shvachos, animals, livestock, and he's providing for people as they come. Famously, they come in, he gives them to eat, they want to pay, he says, no, who gave it to you, who gave it to me, thank the Rabbeinu Shalom, etc. And he goes, as we said, place to place, professing emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and convincing people about it. And then the Medrash tells us that Nimrod came once to stay with Avraham Avinu. as part of his reconnaissance, he comes to stay with Avraham Avinu. Avraham knew exactly who he had as his guest, Machnish Wissendik, and he lets Nimrod stay. And Nimrod stays for 3 months. At the end of which, he's seen every person when they come at the end of the term of stay, they go to Avraham and they offer to pay, and Avraham says, no, it's a rebellion. So Nimrod's about to do the same thing. And Avraham sees his bags are packed, and he says, oh, pay up. He says, what do you mean pay up? He says, no one else here pays up. He says, no, pay up. So he said, what do you mean? But no one else pays up. He said, no. Everyone else here is a recipient. No one else claims to be a god. Oh, but you claim to be a god, so pay up. So he says, well, I haven't really got money on me. I'll no. God doesn't, he pays, he finds a way. You got one choice. Either you're going to have to stay, you become my eved, because you owe me 3 months of board and lodging, or you're going to write on a piece of paper that you're a fake and you're a man, and that there's one rebellion shalom, and it's not you. Well, the best of the two evils, as far as Nimrod is concerned, is to sign the document, which Avraham Avinu either puts up on his wall or puts on his table. But people now, place to place that he goes to see, not only do they hear his story, but they actually see they've got Sav Yodai of Nimrod, and Nimrod now is really ausgespielt. What's he going to do? Avraham Avinu eventually gets to Eretz Canaan. Hey, HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts Avraham through a Nisayan, but is also taking Nimrod down the tube even further. Because as a result of the famine, Avraham Avinu has to sell what he owns in order to buy food until he's left destitute and he has nothing. To the extent that when he goes, now he realizes, I've got nothing left, so I've got to continue in the direction that the Rebbeinu Shalom sent me before, north to south, so I'll go further south, and he goes to Mitzrayim. And we know he had nothing because he had nothing with which to pay the guest houses in which he stayed on his way down to Mitzrayim. Perfect ammunition for Nimrod. He rises these people and says, you just had this guest. He's the one who goes around telling people about Hashem. Hashem provides. Hashem this, Hashem that. And he's run off. He's stolen from you. He hasn't paid. He stayed. Yeah, he's going to pay back one day. Come on. You know, and if the Rebbeinu Hashem provides, he hasn't provided for him. He's this one who goes around saying that he's a fake. Avraham Avinu comes down to Mitzrayim and he says to Sarah, listen, Leman yitav li ba'avureich, says Rashi, they're going to give me matonis. Avraham, take your matonis. The answer is yes. Because I need to go back and pay all those people back in order to take away the Chilul Hashem that Nimrod is making that we haven't paid back. We'll show him, we'll show. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent us down, part of the master plan. We've accumulated the wealth and we have with what to pay back now. And that's part of why Avraham Avinu took it. And he goes back and Taka on the way back, he goes to each inn, pays them back, tells them about the Nisim that happened with Sarah being abducted and the Malach saving her, etc. And he has with what to continue his story about Emunah. What's Nimrod going to do now? So the Torah tells us the next story about the shepherds of Lot and the shepherds of Avraham Avinu have a disagreement. And Avraham Avinu comes to Lot and says, listen, we've got to separate. Because what happens is, ki anoshim achim anachnu, says Rashi, dover acher, doimeh beklaster ponim. We have similar facial images. Similar facial, we look the same. Remember, Zikna hadn't yet come to the world. Old age hadn't yet come to the world until Avraham Zokim Babayom. It's only when Avraham Avinu became old that people started to age. Until then, no one had white hair, no one was wrinkled. So when it says that Avraham and Lot looked the same, once a person reached their full-grown appearance as a man, that was it. Avraham Avinu remained looking as a 25-year-old his entire life. So he looked exactly like Lot. So he says, listen, Lot, there's a big problem here. Your shepherds go, they're going into other people's fields, they're stealing. And then people watch them, and they see them coming and talking to you. It looks like they're talking to me. People don't know it's not me, it's you, it's not me. So it looks like they are, that my shepherds are stealing. I'm professing the Rebbeinu Shem provides, there's no, Gezel is not on. We've got to separate. Nimrod says, Gevaldig. Now that Lot's not with Avraham, I just need to capture Lot. Parade him around the world, telling people it's Avraham, and I've got my melucha back.
Why didn't he try capturing Avraham Avinu all the years before?
Well, he put him through a kibbutz on Aish. That didn't work. I think he sort of realized that he's not going to...
He's got protection.
Yeah, he's pretty well protected. So Lot, eventually, he's waiting for his opportunity. When he's with Avraham, there's protection. Lot goes down to Sodom. What's the next story the Torah tells us about? The Melchama between the four and the five kings. Which of the kings is not the king? The four kings defeat the five kings, amongst whom is the king of Sodom. And one of the four kings was Amraphel, Nimrod. Who does he take captive? Lot. Avraham Avinu thinks, Rabbeinu Shalom, this is mamash. Do you know what potential Chilul Hashem is going to come out of this? So I go and I put my life on the line, even though it's absurd. 318 of us, and eventually he was only left with him and Eliezer, because Mimon Avshoch. If they kill me, everyone will know Avraham Avinu died. It's going to be a massive Levi. And if they don't kill me, I get Lloyd. Can you imagine? Then the Kiddush Hashem. So Avraham Avinu said, you've got to be Moshe Nefesh, our Kiddush Hashem, and that's why that's the story that follows of at which Avraham Avinu was successful. He defeated Stoim. And there's a beautiful Yalkut Me'am Lawyers. I mean, this is the Yalkut Me'am Lawyers, the way it says it. There's other Midrashim, but the Yalkut Me'am Lawyers says, then what actually happened was, is the four kings started to fight back against Avraham Avinu. What they saw is that every spear, every arrow, and every bit of ammunition that even hit Avraham Avinu's chevra didn't affect them. It just didn't do it. It bounced off. It didn't touch them.
Like so, nice with the Romans, who sent all the dust.
Yeah. So, but here, the ammunition they were sending wasn't doing anything to Avraham and his chevra. And then, says, this is the Yalkut Me'am Lawyers' take on it, then Avraham picks up earth and starts throwing it at them. And they convinced themselves that this was some sort of magical ammunition. It wasn't, it was plain earth, says the Me'am Lawyers. But because they convinced themselves, it actually did affect them. Says the Me'am Lawyers, I'll tell you a story about what happened with the Rambam. The Rambam was, we know, was the physician of the Sultan of Egypt, and there was another doctor there who was really jealous of him. So again, there's variations of this story. I'll tell you the way I saw it from the Yalkut Me'am Lawyers. And the physician goes to the Sultan and says, you know what, I don't understand why you really like the Rambam. He's not that good. And yeah, he's helped you out all this time, but you know what, I'm better than him. Let's have a challenge. And he tried, and eventually he came up with this challenge. Each of us will prepare a poison for the other one. The other has to prepare the antidote, and whoever survives is the best one. And the Rambam accepts the challenge. In fact, the Rambam says, not only am I accepting the challenge, I'll drink yours first. Okay? The Rambam gets a few of his Talmidim. He creates an antidote, which is a type, contains within it the ability to drain the body or really get the body to vomit out anything that it has ingested. And he takes a little bit in the morning before he goes to the challenge. He tells his Talmidim, look, this is just going to be part one, but you've got to be sure that whatever he's going to give me, I'm going to need this afterwards. He tells him exactly where to take him, how to position him, how to give it to him, etc., etc. And the Rambam goes to the royal court. There this fellow is. The Rambam has already had part of the antidotes already inside him. And he's given this laced poison by... And he takes it and he drinks it, and his face goes all colours. In fact, his tongue starts to protrude, starts to go hard, even like wood. His tummy then whisk him out, and immediately administer exactly as he had instructed them. And the Rambam survives. The Rambam survives. Now, I can't tell you how long after. I don't know what it says. A short while after. I don't know if it was the same day, same week, whatever. A short while after, the Rambam comes back to the royal court and says, listen, challenge on. It's only right that I now make the concoction for the other doctor. And of course, everyone in the royal court says, if he survived that, the way we saw him going out, it's time to bring in. The Rambam goes down to the prison and takes one of the people on death row, who was imminently going to be put to death. He takes with him a little box which contained inside it the pure sugar substance that he used to make as part of a drink for the Sultan every day. For his health, some natural sugar cane. He puts it in this box, wraps up the box, and around the box another two big scarves, towels, and he goes down to the royal court, comes to the royal court, covers himself in one of the scarves, tells the king, you need to put one on, cover yourself. And he says to the fellow from death row, listen, I want you, when I tell you, when I motion to you, you're to open that box. You're to open that box. Okay, but when I motion to you, and everyone distances themselves. Remember, this poor fellow is on death row. It was a very powerful, sweet-smelling, pure sugar cane substance. And he opens the box, and instantly as he breathes in the vapours of this thing, he collapses, falls to his death. The Rambam waits a little bit. He checks the fellow's got no pulse, and the Rambam takes a little bit of that, pours it into a cup, and he says to the king, I want you to drink some. The king says, you lost your mind. Sultan says, I mean, maybe you didn't die from the stuff they gave you, but it's obviously made you nuts because you don't offer, you just killed a guy with it. You don't offer it to me. He says, no. I'm telling you, you can drink it. It contains, that box contains in it what I give you to drink every single day. Nothing different. In fact, that other doctor is such a useless practitioner, has no idea about medicine. He will be, if he would smell it, he'd probably also die. But he's convinced that inside this, look at him, look at the way, look how petrified he is, look how scared he is. I mean, he thinks he's going to die. Eventually he convinces the king to drink, and the king drinks it, and he survives. I don't know whether he gave the other fellow to eat or drink from it or not, that doesn't say. But he explained there, he said, a person in their kochos ha-nefesh can almost convince themselves about certain things that it can happen. This fellow was convinced he was smelling deathly poison, and it killed him. So the Yaakov knows that's really what happened here. Part of what happened with this Melchama that Avraham Avinu went to, when they saw miraculously that nothing was affecting Avraham Avinu, the missiles that they were sending, whatever they were catapulting, didn't affect them at all. So they were convinced that when they were throwing things back, it was just dust, it was earth. They were convinced that that's what it was, and Taka, it affected them in that way. I saw a beautiful vote from the Kotzke Rebbe. It's a Kotzke vote. That the Kotzke Rebbe said, pshat in the beginning of Lech Lecha. Lech Lecha. Go. Lech Lecha. Gai tzudir. Go to yourself. In other words, Avraham Avinu was being told by the Rabbeinu Shlalem, go and self-introspect. Go and search inside yourself for the koichos that you have. And really, this is part of one of the ten nisyonos, and therefore it's applicable to every single one of us. There's the beginning of any, at any point in our life's mission, it's Lech Lecha. Look, dig deep and see what koichos we have. And use those to continue. In other words, a person may have been in a certain eretz, may have been in a certain moiledes, may have been in a certain bias, but in the end of the day, we've got our own avoda to do. And we've got to make sure that we do it. And at every point and every turn and every opportunity, every struggle, whatever it may be, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's our life's mission. And he tells a person, Lech Lecha, search for your own koichos. Don't look at it from somewhere else, don't look at it in someone else, but search for your own. Rabbi Rabinovich explains this, he says a beautiful little story. We'll cut it short. He says, there was a seasoned gunner who decided that he wanted to steal a particular diamond from the diamond bourse in Antwerp. And he'd done his research, found out about exactly, this is probably the best protected at the time, best protected diamond bourse in the world. But he thought, you know what, he's been proficient at breaking in everywhere else and getting away with it. So this is the next challenge. It's the next stunt as far as his life was concerned. And he went in and he did his reconnaissance and he went around and he realized that it's all virtually impossible for him to be able to get any, steal anything. He walked around and walked past one place and saw a diamond that blew his mind. And actually, as he stood there looking at it, he realized that many other people who were coming by were blown away by this particular large, beautiful diamond. From every angle, the fact that the diamond were, it was something that was. So he stands there waiting. He's wondering, look, who's going to actually buy it? Eventually, a gentleman walks in. He looks at it and it impresses him, and he asks to be able to see it. And he takes a look at it, looks at it, he decides he's going to buy it. The gunner thinks, right, here we go. This is the opportunity. I've got it. You know, this is what I've got to get hold of that diamond. And he decides to, in his very stealthily clever way, follow the gentleman who had taken the diamond. And he follows him, and he follows him, and he follows him out the diamond bourse. And this fellow's walking, and he's keeping it very, very protected, and he's moving from place to place. He knows the value of what he's holding, and he knows that there may be people who may be tracking him. So he's very cleverly moving from place to place, from mode of transport to mode of transport, and eventually they get to the port. He's still tracking him. He sees the fellow embark on a ship, which is setting sail for wherever it was. He joins him, and he manages to get to be right in an adjacent compartment or along the same corridor. And he's waiting for his opportunity. He's waiting for his opportunity. He waits. Each time he's almost in the room. He hears footsteps. It's the fellow coming back. He doesn't manage. So eventually, for whatever reason, he ends up being able to befriend this person, and he actually ends up spending time with him in his cabin. So he's really working this, a treat. One night he decides this fellow's probably out, whatever he may have been doing, eating or davening, and this is his opportunity. So he goes in there. They'd already become almost roommates. They become so friendly. And he starts searching through the guy's bags, one after the other. Just can't find it. Not in his suitcase, not in his personal bags. It's like, it doesn't... So he was good. He knew exactly... He knew where people hide things. It wasn't there. And he's almost finished. And the door opens inward. And he gets caught red-handed. And the fellow says to him, right, come on. So he said, look, please, don't inform me, don't let anyone know, you know, otherwise I'm done with it. He says, okay, you know what, well, you're at my mercy at the moment, but we'll see. But at the moment, I'm not, you know, if we get off here peacefully, then I won't say a word. The gentleman, after a couple of days, says to him, just one thing I need to know from you, now that you know, I know you're not going to turn me in and that, but... You know, I've been looking for this diamond that you bought. I've been following you the whole way. Where is it? He says, I want you to know, I knew you were following me the whole way. I saw you already. It wasn't difficult to know. We've got an eye for the people who are eyeing us up. And I realized already there in the diamond vaults, you were after me. And that's why I went. You saw I changed modes of transport. And I went here, went there. I didn't stay in one single place any time. And in fact, I even knew that you were probably going to try and come on the ship. And that's why I even befriended you and let you come in my cabin. She says, but where's the diamond? He says, you won't find it. It's in this room, but it's not in a single one of my possessions. He says, you know, remember I got you to hang your coat up on the rail over there? It's in the pocket of your coat. The last place the gunner would have looked was in his own coat, for he was so busy looking for it in Yenoms, he didn't find it there. So, le taratoy, Sir Ringamneel. That's Avraham Avinu and we are being told, Lech Lecha. We've got to look in our own pocket. If we're busy searching for the treasures of Yenem, and busy looking at how we can be like Yenem, that's not what we're here for. We're here to be the Lech Lecha. We're here to figure out what we can do, what the koiches that we have, the talents that we have, where we come from, where we are, where we were positioned, and that is our avoda. And that's where we go from, and that's how we progress. Time for a little bit more. Yeah, you know, one of the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu I'm going to tell you something else. Later on in the parasha, Hagar is running away from Sarah, and she meets four malachim, one after the other. So it says, Vayimtsa'el malach Hashem al ein hamayim bamidbar al ayin bader ashur vayomer Hagar shifcha Sarah imi zevos v'anaserechi. Where are you coming from? Where are you going? Vatoyim, and she says, "V'pnei Sarai Gevirti Anochi Barachas." I'm running away from Sarai. Vayomer Malach Hashem, "Shuvi El Gevirteich V'hisani Tachas Yodel." Rashi says each time it's Vayomer Malach Hashem, Vayomer Malach. Each why is Vayomer, Vayomer, Vayomer? Each one was a different Malach, which itself requires. And why did she need multiple Malachim to talk to her? Just one Malach. So you see, each Malach does a different tafkid. Okay, so the one that was coming to tell her that she was going to have a child and it's going to be called Yishmael, fine. But the first one who engaged her in conversation and told her to go back is the same one he asked, where are you coming from? She says where she's coming from. And then another one comes and tells her to go back. Why do you need another one for that? So I saw Rabbi Avraham Shah says that he heard from the Reis Yisrael in the name of the Sfarim HaKadoshim that he says that this Malach came here to Hagar, and the Malach says to Hagar, Vayomer, Hagar Shifcha Sarai, Emi Zevos for Ono Selechi. Hagar the Shifcha of Sarah. Where are you coming from and where are you going? So what was the Malach telling her? Okay, she'd been given a hard time by Sarai Emenu, yes. And she was very frustrated and very upset. So she was running away from that home. So the Malach says to her, one second. Can you just calm down a second? And try and figure out where is it that you are coming from and where you're going to. At the end of the day, you know, your father said it's best for you to be in that home because better to be a shifcha in the home of Avraham than to be a gevira in the house of someone else. And where are you running back? You're running back to him. So the Malach was there to come and tell her, hey, a little bit of yishuv hadas. What does Hagar say? She says, yeah, you know what? And I'm going to go back. As soon as she stopped and contemplated and thought and sort of readjusted, she's now on a different madriga. And he says the malach gets sent to a person can measure it to the madriga that they're on. In which case, it needed required a new malach, a higher malach, to come and talk to her once she made that decision. He says, you know, we find another time, and here, the beautiful lashon of the pasuk is, vayim tzo'er ha-malach, a malach found her. It's like a metzia. What's that, first, that lashon. He says, we also find later on, that it says, vayim tzo'eu ish, by Yosef HaTzadik, vayim tzo'eu ish, v'hinei toya basodeh, vayisholeu ish, lema ma tavakesh, and the ish asked him, what are you looking for? He says, the Kotzker Rebbe said, vayim tzo'eu ish, the malach found him, v'hinei toya basodeh, he was, stuck, getting lost in the. It actually says the same thing about later on in next week's parashah about Hagar, but he was getting lost. So the Malach comes to him and says to him, "Ma tavakev." So the Kotzker Rebbe, the Malach was saying to him, "When you are toya, when you're floundering, you're not sure where you're going. Always ask yourself, Ma tavakev. What am I seeking in my life? Where's my objective? Where's my tachlis? What am I?" And that stops a person. It calms them down. And it helps them to realign themselves and figure out where they're heading and where they're going. He says, these malachim, it's not shat that the Rebbeinu Shem sends a malach and it takes away the person's bechira, told them they could choose where they were going, and now the malach says, no, you can't, you've got to go there. It's not, it's a different type of malach. And that's the mitzvah. We have malachim that are with us the whole time. From the mitzvahs that we've done and the guardian angels that we have, we've got malachim with us the whole time. And the Rebbeinu Shem allows those malachim to, sometimes we just, they're with us, they're there. Metzia is something that's there, that we didn't know that was there, that we suddenly figure out is there. It's the same, the malachim are with us the whole time, we just don't always realize that they're there. And when they're there, and when they make themselves apparent, the purpose of them is to say, just think about, is this worth it, is it not? He says, we all have experiences, everyone has experiences where a Yetzirah takes us to a place that we shouldn't, maybe I should do this or I shouldn't do it. And somewhere along the way, even if after I've made a decision, I'm going to do something that perhaps I shouldn't do, the ikuvim that come along the way, the little manias that come along the way, those are malachim, saying, hey, stop and think, stop and think, stop and think. Not to get away my bechira. It's to stop and think, stop and think. Matavakish. Emi zebos, v'anas elechi. Where are you coming from? Where are you going? And that's the two, vayimtza'ehu malach, vayimtza'eho malach, vayimtza'ehu malach, the malach who finds Hagar, the malach who finds Yosef HaTzadik. It's there along the way to just remind the person and ask the person, stop, try be a little headed and think what the objective is. That's one of the things that Avraham Avinu was told later on in the parasha by the Bris Ben Avsarim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, go above the stars, habet no ha-shamayimah, look down from the shamayim, count the stars. You think you can count them? If you can count them, this is what your children are going to be like. So, the Tzanzer Rebbe, the Hinei Gedivrei Chaim said, stars, if you look at them from where we are, they look tiny. The closer you get to them, you realize how big they really, really are. He says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Avraham Avinu, Koyi Ezarecha. Even though outwardly here on the land, they look like, in the way we're treated by the Umas Olam, like we're tiny. But you should know in Shamayim, each of them is Nechshav, like a Korcha, like a whole star. Rameh Shapira Zech Tzadeh Baruch the Lublin Rosh Shiva, he said, what the Rebbeinu Shem wanted to tell us was, these beautiful words, he says, our rotzen is not defined by our ability. The Rebbeinu Shem says to Avraham Avinu, go count the stars. You able to count the stars? You're not. You're trying to count them. Avraham Avinu started to count them. You can't count them anyway. I just told you. That's what your children are going to be like. They're not going to measure their will to do by what they think they can do. Can you count the stars? You can't count the stars. Are you trying to count the stars? Yeah, you go for it. Kol Yisrael. Kol Yisrael will always. They see something. You can get closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's something that Avraham wants us to do. It's beyond our ability. Our Kol Yisrael. We'll go for it. We'll go for it because we'll somehow find renewed koyach. As the Haftarah says, "V'koye Hashem yachanifu koyach." Those who are makaveh, who are desperately wanting to get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, yachanifu koyach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives them koyach. Yalu eva kanasharim. They get more. They like nasharim. They get more koyach. than they thought they ever had. The Apt Rav, Heiliger Oyev Yisrael, he was a Rav in Apt. He'd been living in Meshuvah, he went to be the Rav in Apt, and after a certain amount of time, he told them, he wants to go back to live in Meshuvah. So they said to him, why do you want to go back to Meshuvah? What have we done wrong? Are you going to leave us? What have we done? No, on the contrary, we agreed to, you asked us for actually a really, really significant wage. We've been paying it. So why are you leaving us? He says, I want to tell you a story. He says, years ago, there were two little brothers back in the day, 2 8-year-old brothers, ended up each leaving home at a young age and going and doing whatever they did, and each ended up in two different parts of the world. They thought, they didn't hear from each other. You know, in those days, you could have been in the next town or city, but there was no way of knowing or making known. They didn't know where the other one went. And one of them became extremely wealthy, and the other one ended up becoming extremely, extremely poverty-stricken. The one who became extremely wealthy was very successful, a successful business, and unfortunately was never zoche to have any children. He was coming towards a period in his life where he felt actually that the Rebbeinu Shlomo was calling him back, and after all the tzedakah and chesed and everything else that he had done, it was time for him to go. But he said to his wife, listen, I need to tell you that we've got to figure out a plan, because Lemaisa, I have a brother. I have no idea what's happening. Don't know where he is. I have no idea. But you won't be able to get married without chalitza. So, you know, we've got to figure out. And before they figured out a plan, Lemaisa, he was called back, begins a Meremim. So the Amana went to the Rav of the town and said, look, we've got to figure out what to do here. I don't know what to do. So he says, look, what was the name? And he sent letters to telegrams to all the nearby cities and towns, and not so nearby, to the Rabbanim there, asking them if they knew someone by that name, Ben so-and-so, the father and the mother, and if he had a brother, because he needs to come and do chalitza. And actually, the Amana is offering half of the wealth of her late husband to give to this brother-in-law if he comes to perform the chalitza. So one of the Rabbanim recognized, yeah, this guy in my town, he's called out, that's Stephanie's father's name, it's his mother's name. Calls him in, did you have a brother? Yeah, what was his name? There's a name. Oh, okay, look, you know, I've got to tell you that Shmuel Rechoka, he's been nifta, but you've got to go. And you don't need to worry about the expenses, because apparently there was a huge estate left behind, half of which you're going to get for actually going and doing the job. So I'll lend you the money to go and make your journey there. You should go and do it, do the mitzvah and come back. So the fellow says, okay, he's going to go home and tell his wife about it, goes home. So his wife says to him, you know, we have nothing. We're absolutely poverty stricken. But Baruch Hashem, you have tefillin, you put them on every day. Shabbos, we somehow keep every week, and we're ma'anagis our Shabbos. Yom Tov, once a year. You have an opportunity for a mitzvah that most people don't even get in a lifetime. You're going to go and give it away. You're going to go and take schar in this world for that mitzvah. Like, come on, how can you do it? You can't do that. And she convinced him that you don't take schar for a mitzvah like that. Bifrat, that you're taking it from an almana, because that's all she's got left behind from her late husband. You're going to go and take away that. So he said, okay, yeah, I'm asking. So she says, no, I know you too well. You make a shvuah to me here. And then Akita Schaefetz, he takes all of her carbon minchasida and he makes a shvuah that Taka, he's not going to take any of them. So he returns the money back to the Rav because he's not going to be able to pay him back when he's not going to have anything to come back. And he sets out by foot. So eventually he gets to the town, goes to the Rav of the town and says, I am so and so, I've come to the Khalid. Oh, fine. He informs the Amana that the husband, your late husband's brother has arrived. And so she arranges a room for him in a upper class hotel. And she sends him clothing and everything that he should be able to be dressed in a fashion that would be befitting for an event that she was taking part in. And the date was set for the chalitza, and the chalitza happens. At the end of the chalitza, she pulls out a massive, massive, she has some of her chevra pull out for her a huge amount, sacks of coins to give. And this fellow says, my wife was right to make me make that shvua, because I really want it. But he tells her, listen, I made a shvua, I can't take it. Don't want to say, but I said, I also like sort of said that this is what I'm going to do with it. So what? They couldn't figure out what to do. And Lemaisa, they decided they're going to give it to the city's kupa, the kupa of the kehillah, and it will be used for something sometime. So that after all to these Eden, what happened was that he'd walked back, went all the way back to his city, and he came out having done that mitzvah. These people were already older people. They themselves hadn't had children. And at an old age, the Rabbeinu Shel Olam was mezakeh them with a child. And that child is me. And I know this story, because it's a story about my parents and about my uncle and aunt. And they lived here in Apt. And I knew that the kupa of the kehillah in Apt was stashed full with money that my father couldn't take because he'd made a shvur, but his money is part of our mishpacha's money. So when you asked me to become the Rav here, I set an amount. I knew how much was there. I knew what was everyone. It was a well-known thing. That was the wages that you paid me. I've worked out that today is finished the payment of those wages. In which case, the money that belongs to the family is back to me. Now I'm going back to measurables. So one thing I'll leave you is that I'll always be known as the Ovi Soil of Apt. I'll always be known as that. That's the story. But the story is about this wife made her husband making sure he wasn't going to take the money. For what? Because she was going to get something back from the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. She had absolutely no idea. But she devoutly meant that there's an opportunity here for a mitzvah, which is, it's a once in a lifetime mitzvah for so few people, and we're gonna do it as the mitzvah for the mitzvah. Because this is Ratzon Hashem, and he sent us the opportunity for the mitzvah, so we take nothing for it. And the Rebbeinu Shel Olam says, you know what? Yachalifu koyach. I'd actually give them renewed koicha so they're able to have a child, and they're able from that to, and not some a child, but the Heidegger Abdarov, who's from him has come a whole lineage of chashivus in Klal Yisrael. That's part of the looking into the koichas that a person has, the lech lecho, finding the koichas that a person has and appreciating what they are. The honor, the malach that we all have, those malachim that come and give us perspective, calm us down and give us perspective, where we're coming from, where we're going to, ma'atabakesh, and from that, the person, Be'ez Hashem, is able to think with a clear mind, and say, in the end of the day, what are we here for? We're here to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and with that, L'koyah Hashem, Yachalifu Koyach, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should always continue to give us all renewed, juvenile koychus to be able to do His ratzon, to be able to get close to Him.